Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.
Discover the power within. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions, with your host, Reverend Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Widdicombe in the Moor in Dartmoor in England. Some may be familiar with the book or the movie The Hound of the Baskervilles, which of course was set in Dartmoor, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Others may know the old folk song called Widdicombe Fair, which is all about the folks going to the fair, which is what we attended today. And I've got some friends with me, and we're going to sing the song, at least the start of it. Tom Piers, Tom Piers, lend me your grey mare. Oh, they're not helping me. All along, down, along, out, along, Lee. For I want to go to Widdicombe Fair with Will Brewer, Jan Stewart, Peter Gurney, Peter Davey, Daniel Whitten, Harry Hawke, and Uncle Tom Cobley and all. And Uncle Tom Cobley and all. I hope we didn't break any microphones there or whatever. But anyway, that song goes back to the 18th
on
that.
Thank you, Steve, for singing along with Paul.
There we go. It goes back to the 18th or 19th century, and the actual fair itself has been going for hundreds of years. I'm here in Widdicombe Fair in 2018 with friends Vicky and Steve Brown, who were actually walking the Two Moors Way from the English Channel to the Bristol Channel across Dartmoor and Exmoor. Also, of course, my wonderful wife is here, Wendy. So welcome to Vicky and Steve and to Wendy. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
So Steve's been on these walks before. He's done the walk from the coast of the Irish Sea across to the North Sea, and that's quite a walk, I think, across the Lake District, across the North York Moors. Tell us about that. That was quite a trip, wasn't it?
Well, that's been a few years when I had a little bit younger legs, but a friend talked me into going with him on the walk from St. Bees to Robin Hood's Bay, and we spent a rather slow passage, 14 and a half days walking the 192 miles across the north of the country. It was a great walk. The Lake District is beautiful beyond compare. The North York Moors are a bookend to it on the North Sea, and in between some beautiful farming country.
Right. Yeah, very rugged, isn't it? What amazes me about Britain, even though it's a small country, there's so much wild. You know, there's a lot of people fitted into cities, but then there's huge areas that are kind of almost desolate, right?
Absolutely. On that coast-to-coast walk, we would see other walkers, but if we passed a village in a day walking, that would be a remarkable thing.
Right, amazing. And boggy, you know, the walks that I've done, there's a lot of rain in Britain, I guess, and these uplands are very wet and full of bogland and swampy ground, so it makes walking even more challenging, but also rewarding, because once you get to the hostelry at the end of the day, right, it's nice to sit down in front of the fire, have a pint or whatever.
Absolutely.
And enjoy yourself. Yeah. So thoughts on Devon so far?
Well, I've only, this is the fourth day of walking. I spent 2 days walking the South Hams from the coast at Wimbury to Ivy Bridge, which is the official start of the Two Moors Way. It's beautiful, hilly farm country, fairly dense number of villages, very friendly people, good beers, that was good. And then the last 2 days across Moorland, starting in Ivy Bridge and walking up for more miles than I care to think about walking up, and ending up the first night in the little village of Skorriton, friendly hostelry there, and then from Skorriton through Hone to Widdicombe.
And that's when we joined Vicky and Steve, because we came from Norway yesterday, and we'll talk maybe a little bit about our journey from Trondheim to Dartmoor, from one extreme to the other in one day.
Well, it would be nice also to talk about the difference in the culture and just how the feel of people, when we get there. So.
Yeah, I'll bring that up too, because that's kind of interesting to notice the different character of certain national types. It's always interesting. You don't want to stereotype too much, but there is a sort of a sense of a people that is different from one to another country.
Well, we definitely knew that we had gone from one rural country to another rural country. It was,
yeah, and that's true. You know what? With some of the things we loved about Norway were the agriculture that goes on. You'd go on through the fjords and on little roads, and there'd be farm machinery and tractors going up and down the road. So it's still a very vibrant agricultural nation. And they just brought in the harvest. Apples were in abundance and plums, but also they brought in the hay and the crops, I guess, barley, whatever. And very fastidious about that. It's a very important part of their economy, and I would say it's an important part of their culture still. And so here, right? We've just been to the fair, as we said, which happens once a year, usually the second week in September. Only happens for one day, but the whole thing takes over the village. They're in various fields near the village. And in the village itself, lots of tents, lots of displays, lots of animals, much like a county fair in America, if we're familiar with that, but with an English twist. And there were definitely a lot of country folks here. You know, it wasn't just play acting. These people were the real thing. And, there was displays of sheep and cattle and displays of horsemanship, and there were town criers too. There was a display of town criers. Each town in the local area has their own town crier, which is a sort of ceremonial post where you make announcements with a big booming voice and ring bells or whatnot, dress up like 18th century gentlemen or gentlewomen. There's quite a few female town criers now, so let's hear it for that. Because it used to be just exclusively male, but now that's not the case anymore, so that's good.
Vicky actually talked to one.
Yeah, and Vicky talked. I did too. Actually, yeah, we talked too. To that one. Yeah, tell us about that, Vicky. What was your experience with that lady? She seemed really nice, didn't she?
Well, apparently they had a small competition in their town, and they felt that she wasn't the loudest, but she was the clearest.
There we go.
And she had the best message.
I love it.
I got started talking to her because Steve had taken a photo of her during her competition performance.
Right.
And we were sitting in the music tent, and I saw her, and I went over with Steve's phone and showed it to her, and she was just thrilled.
That was an awesome picture. We ought to put that picture up on your website.
I think I did post it, actually.
Oh, did you?
I posted some pictures on my Facebook of Widdicombe Fair. One of them included that lady as she was declaiming at the village square, or the village green, in part of the afternoon. So, yeah, that was cool. But I love that. You know, you don't always have to be the loudest, right? Yeah, there's a lot of metaphysics and spirituality in that. You have to be the clearest. And I think that's what we're called upon to be in life, is to be clear that's more powerful and profound than some noise that we might hear from someone who tries to make a big effect by the size of their voice or whatever. I'm not making any other comments there, folks. You can take it whichever way you want. Just food for thought about sometimes it's good to be just clear and quiet.
Clear and quiet.
Clear and quiet. All right. So tell us about where we are. We're in a little bed and breakfast place, and it's right on the edge of the moor, isn't it? It's an old farmhouse.
It is. We're in Berrywood Cottage. It's about 3/4 of a mile south of the center of Whittacombe, which is not very large in itself. So we are in what is called Upper Dunstan, or Higher Dunstan, literally on the bank of the moor, leading up to where, if the weather holds, will be the beginning of tomorrow's walk.
So we were driving here last night, and it's very dark. And as we were driving through the moor, we knew we were on the moor because we had visited before. But you're driving along, and it's black on either side of you, and all of a sudden it was brown on the side of us, and it was like we passed this brown splotch, and I went, "Oh my God, that was a horse." That was laying, I mean, it was like standing right parallel to the road, and it like spooked me. After that, I was like on the lookout for for the horse, and of course it was, we came up on its rear end, otherwise we would have seen its eyes. But
right.
Interesting just how remote and how just remote it is up here. But then you break into a town and you're in a lovely little setting that people are gathered in, and that's interesting in its own self, how community all of a sudden gathers.
Interesting thing about Great Britain is the number of places where feral horses still exist. We could even call them wild. For instance, in Dartmoor and Exmoor and the New Forest and in Wales and in the north part of Britain, Shetland, of course, we're famous Shetland ponies. So lots of, they're pretty much wild because they go their own way, but they originated, I think, in domesticated animals that had become wild again. So that's interesting. So once you're up on the open moor, you see a lot of these wild ponies.
Steve, have you come across, what animals have you come across out in the open?
So far, it's been pretty pedestrian. I have seen a couple of the Dartmoor ponies. Mm-hmm. They're wonderful to come across. Other than that, an incredible variety of birds, but wow, not much four-footed animals.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Except that there's an infinite variety of sheep and,
yeah,
and cows and one very large black bull on the other side.
Yeah.
We had to think a little while before we opened that gate and went through it.
Right.
But didn't you have a little encounter with a goat that had some opinion?
Very acquisitive goat. He was not happy with where I chose to sit down to take a little break.
There we go.
Yeah, told you to move right on.
Because it's there more. The interesting thing about Dartmoor is historically it was one of the more densely populated parts of Britain, hard to believe today. But you can't go anywhere without seeing Bronze and Iron Age, and even before that, Stone Age circles and homes and all kinds of artifacts have been found and skeletons. So they were very active on the moor back in the day. And according to archaeological analysis, it was at that time a little milder climate, and there were forests all over the moor. So they were up here enjoying what was much more of a solitary environment than it is today. It's still beautiful, but it's rugged, and you actually get, it's dangerous. There's a famous prison that's situated around the center of the moor, which everybody in Britain knows about, Dartmoor Prison. Very few people have wanted to escape, but those that did didn't really survive very much because it's surrounded by bogland and mists and just wilderness. And so very few people have actually escaped from Dartmoor. So it has a reputation, of course, like we said earlier, the Hound of the Baskervilles and other mysterious things. I think this, the modern day, there's supposed to be some kind of a wild cat that wanders Dartmoor. Nobody's sure if it exists, but it's part of the urban legend around here. But it's that kind of a place. You know, when I was at the Moor today, it was like there was a lot of correlations between, you know, looking at this country fair and then looking at our own in Fort Worth, where we're from, because we have a huge stock show every year in January, February. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, really one of the best in America, I think. And
that'd be Fort Worth, Texas.
Yeah, Fort Worth, Texas. Come on down. You're going to enjoy it. And but it's awesome because it gathers people from all over the Southwest, and the animals and the horse riding expertise is unbelievable, the rodeo and all that. So I was proud, actually, for the tradition of the West, you know, the American West, and how those skills and those the pride of what's done there is a very high level. And not that this wasn't today, but you know, these traditions are strong. And that's important.
Yeah, and speaking of traditions, we were watching the women throw these hay bales. Hay bales over the top of their heads, over this pole,
right.
Like limbo hay bale throwing. Yes. Anyways, they were throwing these. They were not full size. They were moderated. But Paul and I started talking on
women's
the way
size. No, I shouldn't have said that.
But we were talking on the way on our walk home, though, how that the people here, I mean, they had to throw hay. They had to bale it. They had to throw it. They have to be strong. And some of the things that you see, like in the stock show in Fort Worth, is all about how it used to be done without equipment, where it was just manpower. It was woman power. It was our brute strength that did things. And we don't need to forget those things, because it's close to the earth, and it's learning. It's our bodies working to do the things that it was like meant to be. And some of the things in the Fort Worth Stock Show is like that also.
Right.
And along those lines, I mean, we were watching sheep shearing demonstrations today, and they were doing it the old-fashioned way with 7-inch long razor sharp shears, managing and holding the animal to make it work.
Well,
it's not much done that way anymore. Mm-hmm. It's all mechanical shearing equipment.
Right. Electronic, yeah.
But this fair was a lot about preserving old folk ways.
Yeah, and they were
remembering the way that lives are made on the
morning. They were spinning. Right. They were spinning the wool.
But
too.
Two of the men who were doing this demonstration are going next year to represent the UK.
Oh, wow. Really?
As blade shearers, uh-huh, as opposed to electric shearers.
Yeah.
And you know, they're saying electric shearing has been going on for many, many years, and it's a real thing. But we feel this is the original. Mm.
But we, you know, take this back to when we were in Norway, we were listening to or learning about how the Vikings and how they knew about their environment. They understood it. They knew which way the wind was blowing. They knew how close they were to land by the environment, like the birds, you know, et cetera, that was around them. And we're sitting in a room full of sailors. Vicki and Steve are both sailors, as well as myself. And so, sailing is about that. Sailing is about the earth and being in touch with where you are and what's around you. And you can learn so much. I mean, I have never done a walk across the moors. I've been on the moors. I've been on the moors with Maggie Whitehouse, who is, I think, going to be on your show
next week.
Maggie's on the show, and she's been on the show before. But I've been on the moors. But there has got to be a correlation with that. Your sailing sense, Steve, has got to like pick up in there that you're aware of the wind direction and aware of what's going on around you because you're a sailor.
Right, absolutely. Well, one thing that strikes me is when I was a kid, and this is a long time ago now, 50 years ago, you know, we were
16.
We were inculcated. Well, I call that a kid. We were inculcated with the idea of farmers wearing smocks and using, you know, primitive rakes and this, that, and the other, and going to war and all that. And today, you know, 60 years, 50 years later, those traditions are still being honored. You know, the idea of the primitive and the going back to the basics. What that tells me is we don't want to let go of those things. You know, we're still seeing them as valid, that they were part of our history and our inheritance. Yeah, and that there's, like you said, there's people who are still sharing in the old way, and which is a good thing. It's not sort of a nostalgic thing. I think it's learning that there's important aspects to our history that we don't want to just lose. What another fascinating thing that I saw today, they did a display of how hay was cut and baled over the centuries, starting, of course, with a scythe and a rake, and then going all the way up to, you know, high-powered combines and tractors and whatnot, and totally different techniques. But there was still that sense of we honor the past, we honor where we've come from, and we don't want to lose that. We want to have the strength and the ability to do things without the big machines. Although, and by the way, in Dartmoor, you can't really use big combines or anything like that. You're still having to use fairly small equipment because the way the environment is, it's too hilly and difficult. Topography is too difficult to use the latest equipment. So they're making do. Back in the day, they had a hard time even getting the produce off the moor down into the valleys because it was so primitive here. And it's primitive today, right? Imagine what it was like back in the day. And today the fog is closing in on us. And this is just September, so I can't imagine what it's like in the middle of winter here. It's got to be pretty rigorous environment.
So I wanted to comment on something that really charmed me today.
Yeah.
They had a group of young people who were a riding performance group.
Right.
But some of them had only been riding for a month, 2 months, 3 months. And
they
one
were
of them
tiny too.
One of them was turning 3 years old.
Oh my goodness.
On Saturday.
That is young, isn't it?
I thought that was a special moment for me to be here and to see. That was just lovely. And she paraded around and she was waving as big as she could every moment she could. It was lovely.
She was so happy. She was so thrilled to be there and to be a part of those girls. And because they were probably, 15, 16 years old, all the way down to her. And she was just as proud as she could possibly be. And she also had somebody standing right by her, running beside her. But she was having the time of her life. And you're right, Vicki. It was something that we got to see there.
Well, I had a little interaction, as Steve and Vicki did, with two young blonde-headed boys who were eating the largest snow cones I've ever seen. And somebody mentioned they were going to be up all night with all that sugar and energy. And they responded by saying, no, it's just ice with a lot of food coloring. And Steve said, it was Vicki, I can't remember, but she said, you know, does it taste sweet? And they said, yes. Well, there's probably a little sugar in there too. But it was delightful the way they came back. You know, oh, it's just ice with some food coloring. I wasn't expecting these little boys to be so articulate, actually. But they were. But
bless their hearts. What was the mead that we had?
Oh, yeah, there was also mead. Yeah, that's a little sugary and sweet. But mead is the oldest alcoholic beverage, so they say. It's made of honey. And there was a stall selling delightful mead, actually. It was flavored with various things, elderflowers and hawthorn berries and ginger and all kinds of stuff. So Yeah, that was nice. They were all kinds of things that you could enjoy at the fair. Let's put it like that. But that's what the fair is about, right? Is to taste and try and see all the various local produce. Good news is that just like in the States, you know, the locavore movement is progressing, and organic food and going back to the earth again and trying to stay a little closer to Mother Nature, not so processed food. So that's a good trend as well. So folks, I'm with Steve and Vicky Brown, my wife Wendy. We're discussing what it's like to be up on the moor in Widdicombe in the southwest part of England, the beautiful county of Devon. We're going to talk more when we come back from the break about some stereotypes, national stereotypes. Is there such a thing? And, you know, there's a danger, isn't there, whenever we talk about stereotypes that we put people in boxes. But maybe there is a tendency. I don't know. Let's talk about that when we come back from these after these messages from Unity. And thank you, folks, for tuning into this show, World Spirituality. And thank you very much for being on the listening to the voice of an awakening world. Check out my website if you'd like at pauljohnroach.com. Also, my Facebook and World Spirituality has its own Facebook. So. We appreciate you tuning in. And if you have any questions, you've got that number, 251-355-5. Talk to you in a second.
You're listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
It takes you to power Unity Online Radio. If you'd like to make a positive difference in the world, you can by contributing to this global ministry. Unity Online Radio relies on listeners like you to support our broadcasts that send our messages out to an awakening world. Go to unityonlineradio.org and click on Donate today.
Here's a Unity Mindful Moment with Eric Butterworth, taken from the live lecture, A Course in Practical Metaphysics.
Emily Cady, in her Lessons in Truth, makes a statement which I think we need to kind of think about a little bit. She says, God is not a being with qualities or attributes, but he is the good itself coming into expression as life, love, power, wisdom, etc. He is the good itself coming into expression as life, love, power, and wisdom. In other words, and this again is shattering to some of us, God is not loving. God is a loving God. God is not loving. Because the moment we talk about God as loving, we've got the anthropomorphic Michelangelo like God sitting up in a crowd somewhere with his heart beaming out and say, oh, I love you all down there, see you so dearly, as long as you're good. But I'm not going to love you very much if you don't go to church and so forth. God is not loving. God is love.
To find out more about Eric Butterworth, visit unity.org.
Here's a Unity Mindful Moment. Unity founder Charles Fillmore is quoted as saying, here is a mental treatment guaranteed to cure every ill. Sit for half an hour every night and mentally forgive everyone against whom you have any ill will. The act of forgiveness is powerful medicine. Is there someone in your life that you can work on forgiving? Try this exercise tonight. To forgive is to set yourself free. Find out more about Unity at unity.org.
If you're looking to deepen your spiritual journey, Unity Magazine is your go-to source for information and inspiration. It's been beautifully redesigned and packed with interesting articles and compelling interviews from today's spiritual thought leaders. You'll find science, spirituality, and healing with a look at Eastern philosophies, meditation, as well as completely new ways to interpret the Bible. Plus, reviews on the latest spiritual books and music. Get a free trial issue at unitymagazine.org.
Discover new ways to heal yourself physically, emotionally, and spiritually with Michael Schwartz and Spiritual Naturopathy. Every Monday at 12 p.m. Central, Michael offers a holistic path to healing and guides listeners to new levels of self-awareness, touching on topics like intuition, healing by faith, dream interpretation, and a lot more. Michael explores how to maximize our spiritual gifts and helps us discover how much healing power we really have. Call in with your questions and comments every Monday here on Unity Online Radio.
Call now with your question or comment. 816-251-3555. That's 816-251-3555.
We now return to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
So welcome back to today's show. This is the second show in our series on adventuring in Europe. We were in Norway, the first show, and this week we're in Widdecombe on the Moor, and I've got Steve and Vicky Brown, friends of ours, and Wendy with me. Next week we're going to be interviewing Maggie Whitehouse, who actually lives on Dartmoor. And then in the fourth week we'll be in Iceland, and Steve and Vicky will be back with me, and maybe some Icelandic creatures. I don't know. We'll see. There's all kinds of wonderful things up there, I think. Yesterday we came back from Trondheim, which is in the central part of Norway, to Widdecombe in one day. We had to go from Trondheim to Oslo, Oslo to London, and then down here to the West Country. And it was a long day. We got here about just after 9, after leaving at 7 in the morning. So it was a long day, but it's amazing to me how our world works, you know, that we can go such distances so easily and with quite a bit of complication, really, different ways of travel. But here you are. You can move from that place to another place. This speaks to the sophistication of our world. We truly are a global village in many regards. And yet, you know, there's many differences still. I mentioned before the break, talking about stereotypes. You know, we don't want to go into stereotypes. The danger with stereotypes is we think we know something, we categorize it, and then we can condemn it or put it in a box. And that's not helpful. But there are certain flavors and characteristics of cultures and people maybe that are quite interesting. And we felt that coming from the Nordic nation to the British way of doing things. And folks are different. You know, they're still very lovely people. They're helpful. We had no person that was difficult with us in Norway. They were very gracious. And yet they're slightly different from the British, you know, a little bit more reserved perhaps initially. They do their Nordic thing kind of thing. And it got me musing about different ways of approach, you know. Not all of us approach things in the same way. Some of us are introverted, some of us are extroverted. We certainly don't want to all be the same, right? We honor diversity. And yet, you know, we don't want to be so diverse that we lose the fact that we are all in this together. There's a commonality. And we talk about this a lot in Unity, the idea that, yeah, we are one, but we honor the nuances of that, the flavors of that. And it's very important to do so and to understand that people approach things differently. One of the interesting things for me, we were staying in the part of Oslo that was multi-ethnic when we were there. And so we had dinner in a Turkish place, and we saw a lot of people from the Middle East on the street. And but it seemed very nice. You know, it seemed like a fine place to hang out. It wasn't intimidating at all. And I thought this is the best of multiculturalism, you know, where you can feel comfortable in a foreign country, but with people from way different part of the world. And I think some people are afraid because they see people with darker skin or whatever, or speaking a different language, and they feel intimidated. It's not an easy subject to talk about. one of the things we went to, one of the stave churches in I think it was Loam was the name of the town, and the person there who was taking the tickets was from Syria, a young woman, and she said she had to leave Syria because of the strife and the war there, and it ended up in Norway. She hoped to go back one day, but she was happy to be in a safe country. So it's wonderful to make connection with all kinds of people. Any thoughts on that, you know, in all your travels, that in terms of ethnicity and different cultural attitudes and character? What do you think about the British people? They're an interesting bunch, well, aren't they?
Very welcoming bunch. Uh-huh. I think one of the reasons to travel is to meet people, to hear people, to talk to them. And Vicky's much better at that than I am. I'm your basic introvert who can do extrovert for about an hour at a time.
Yeah,
I retreat into my shell for a bit. But the British people have been remarkably warm, welcoming, easy to strike up a conversation with, and yet they talk and they think and they act in different ways than what I live amongst in Fort Worth. It's fascinating to watch. It's fascinating to be an observer and to learn from it.
Right. One thing I observed today was, you know, there was a lot of variety of people from young and old and farmers, and then people obviously live in towns, probably coming out to the fair. Very little ethnic diversity, though, wasn't there? In this multicultural country called Britain, I don't think I didn't see any people from the East, from, you know, Indian descent or from African descent, from the Caribbean or whatever. So that it was very much a white affair, wasn't it?
And
maybe because we're way out in the middle of the country, we're away from urban centers, you know, that could be part of it.
Well, but that may be, Paul, yeah. but our hosts, Peter and Miho is Japanese and has been living here for 11 years now and has become very much part of this community.
There we go. So I don't think it's anything that they're not in favor of. It's just it attracted folks who were, I guess, lived in rural environments around here, which is fine.
But you're right. It is a homogenous-looking society from the outside.
Right. Interesting. Whereas when you go to London,
it's diverse.
Total opposite, you know, totally opposite. So interesting. And that, again, that's part of what we're talking about, I think, in terms of integration, you know, the inclusivity and diversity of a culture. We have to be aware that everyone's welcome, right? And, you know, that's not easy always. There's suspicions of people that don't look like you or don't speak the same language or whatever, or wear different clothing, etc. But you have to work to mitigate those stereotypes, those attitudes, and know that, you know, basically we're all human beings with the same needs and wants and desires. And whether you like it or not, I think we live in a multicultural world. We can't push the clock back.
Well, we wouldn't want to either. We want that multicultural. We want that diversity so that we can enjoy it. It's the enrichment of life. It's the tapestry of life. And we want that. But I think so much of the time, because we don't understand the other culture, we sort of push it away or something. And, you know, I had a little bit of hard time in Norway because the people were not expressive in their face. And then when you talk to them, they all of a sudden became expressive. They were friendly people. But if you were just walking along the street, they were not very expressive at all. And I was used to something different, considering I grew up in Texas. But I think the key is here is to enjoy the rest of the world and to enjoy people, is that you have to look for where do these people come from. And we were having a discussion this morning at breakfast on how deep is the culture of a person. How many generations does a culture go back? And, you know, I don't think any of us want to breed our culture out of us. I think that would be crazy. That would be not it wouldn't be fun anymore if we bred our culture out of us. But at the same point in time, if we use our culture, our individuality to club each other over the head, it's not fun either. So
right,
there's a balance there. Talk to us about that.
Well, you know, when I'm here in Britain and I speak to people, they say, you know, where are you from? You sound American. And it's like, I feel so, I appreciate very much living in America. Let's put it like that. But I'm also,
you're British.
But I'm also proud of being Welsh. And the idea that I don't sound Welsh anymore is kind of, oh, no, that's too bad. But, you know, to my American friends, I still sound a little weird. I don't sound American to them. To folks over here, it sounds American. And again, that's interesting for me because it's like, who am I? You know, where do I fit in? I know who I am deep down, but on the other hand, I'm exhibiting something else when I talk to people. And again, it comes back to the idea that there's something more about us than just where we grew up, what we think about from our cultural background and whatnot. There's something deeper and more beautiful than those characteristics. And I'm okay with that, letting it all go. You know, we talk about in Unity, releasing and letting go, entering that place of not knowing, because it's in that place of not knowing that we actually know more, because we let go of thinking we know so that we can deeply appreciate something. And that brings me back to a lighter subject. We got a little heavy there, didn't we? A little lighter subject, and that is sense of place, you know. Ever since I was a kid, I've been enthralled with certain places. You know, there's certain places have a character, a feel, often in nature, right? That you know, you feel right there. There's something, and it doesn't have to be an overtly beautiful place, right? There's just something that the way the shape of the hill, the way the light shines, you just feel right there, and. That's interesting to me, you know. I think you can feel that anywhere. I felt that many times in Texas, even though maybe Texas is not as beautiful, quote, as Norway might be. But there's a certain quality there that I love, and that made me think, you know, what is that? What is that sense of place? I know you felt that.
Absolutely. Never really know how to express it sometimes, but. Yesterday afternoon, after finishing about a five and a half, six-hour walk, met Vicky in the backyard of a pub, and one of the runners who I'd run into along the course told us basically, if you can go up on Dartmoor and not fall in love with the place, you're not doing it.
Aww.
Right.
No.
It's a gorgeous place. It feels like home almost instantly while still being foreign.
Interesting.
And sitting in that garden with all of these runners who had just completed the race.
Much more fit than I.
And it wasn't, yeah. The race wasn't as important to them as having done the run. But there was particularly one young couple that had two children with them. And apparently she ran the race and he drove and brought the two kids. And our enjoyment of the entire afternoon was completely enriched by watching this family play sitting on the grass in a beautiful country, a beautiful area.
Right.
And then the cattle started coming in, going back to the barn, and I saw these big full udders, and I could understand that they had some reason to be migrating back to the barn. But I want to say they all stayed for 2 hours at least, if not more. And we just had lovely conversations and couldn't have had a more wonderful time.
Nice runners, notwithstanding they made me feel weak and inadequate when they passed me on the
road.
Well, and that's another thing I think we're all called upon to do right now in our society, which is sometimes, you know, divided in some way. You know, we talked about this before on the show, and that is to knit the divide, you know, to do something that connects. And sometimes we can't wait for somebody else to do it. We have to be the ones to do it, to reach out. And yeah, some of us are introverted. We don't naturally do it so easily as the extrovert. But I think there's something that we gain when we actually reach out and chat with people. I tend to do that all everywhere I go. Just talk directly to people and see what happens. Some people don't want to talk to you, and that's fine. Just move on. But others, you can have a deep conversation all of a sudden. You know, you're talking about various things. You get to know them a little better. And I sincerely believe that this is more than just talking to a person. What we're doing is we're bringing the consciousness together. And that's a subtle thing, but it's important. And more important now than ever. And I encourage us all to do that, you know, wherever we are. You don't have to be traveling to do it. But to take time to talk to others, to make that connection. We're so distracted, as we've often said, with social media and whatnot. We're in our own little world. So it's nice to come back home and talk to somebody and be there, even if it's just in a superficial way. You know, made that connection, and that's so important.
I have a question for Vicky, because Vicky is always, every time I go someplace with you, you're always talking to the people that are around. I mean, mm-hmm. whatever event that we happen to be at, you're like into the family, you're into the, you know, the person sitting on the ground, or into that person over there. Or you're always actually conversing with these people. So I have my question to you is that if you had to say, I just talked to this family at the Whitcomb Fair, or I just talked to this family that was sitting at the park in downtown Fort Worth, do you see a diversity? Do you see a commonality? Do you see what you know, to me, I look down at some of these babies and I'm like looking at them, and their parents are doing the same thing as they do in Fort Worth, Texas. They love their family. They love their babies. You know, they're providing. But as you talk to them from one place to another, do you see any difference in them?
I really don't. It's very, very, the commonality is the theme. And, you know, I mean, our kids are in their 30s.
Yeah.
And I'm talking to these parents with very young children, and they have the same issues that we had,
right.
And they have the same joys mm-hmm. that we had, and they have the same problems
yeah.
that we had. So actually me reaching out and talking to people is a very learned behavior. Mm-hmm. It was not my preferred mm-hmm. style for many years, and I had to train myself to do it. And
right.
now I find it's a richer life.
Yeah.
Because I do
there we go.
Sort of sit down and say, tell me about you.
Mm-hmm.
And people want to.
Right. Yeah. Fascinating.
But what do they tell you? That's what I want to know. I mean, do you think that there's a, do you think that the, I mean, I see such a or tell me if you agree with me. I see such a commonality amongst, like, the mothers that we...
I think that's what she's saying.
You know, came across. That they
that.
Are...
Yeah.
You know, that their problem, their needs and wants and whatever, what they're going through, their lifestyle here is just the same as it is in Fort Worth. It's, they want to do the best by their families.
No, and, I agree.
Absolutely.
I have to add this. Vicky and I have to... Sorry, I have to add this.
Go ahead.
Off the, sort of off the way, but Vicky and I took our children, Jeff and Natalie, sailing here to the Isle of Wight.
Isle of Wight, yeah.
To cows.
We took our children all over Texas sailing. We were their chaperones. We supplied their boats. We did all sorts of things. And it was an amazing experience for our children as well as for us. And, of course, we still have a friendship over, you know, over that. But it's interesting, like Vicky said, our children being in their 30s and now looking back at these 30-year-olds having their own kids and where they are and the modern equipment they have.
There we go.
Jeez,
something's too changed. Something's too changed. Another thing about Wendy is she is the dog whisperer. So wherever we go, she'll talk to every single dog we meet, and therefore usually the people with the dogs. So it's a wonderful way of making connection because, you know, people have a hard time saying, leave me alone when you're petting their dog. They want to at least give you a little minute to...
But Paul, I don't think you were there for the dog competition today that was... The dog that the judge would most want to take home.
There we go.
And it was charming.
Oh.
The one that won was that charming.
We won't go into any further. Other than Paul. It's not that he doesn't like animals. He loves animals, but
thank you.
Dogs happen to really, really like Paul, and they like sniff up his leg, and they like look at him, and they like wag his tail. They're like all excited to see Paul, and Paul is like totally not paying attention to the dog.
Well, the reason they do that is that they're trying to work out if I'm Welsh or American. That's why. Is he Welsh? Is he American? What is he? What is this guy?
Which, by the way, I have my own theory on this after listening to your friends, because you certainly sound Welsh to me. And when Paul gets anywhere near other Welsh people, his Welsh accent comes out even more than what it is, you know, right now. But it's the vocabulary.
Well, that's true.
The British people choose different words than what an American would choose. And that's interesting in its own self, because if I would use one particular word a certain way to explain something, then you might go off on a different direction if you were Welsh.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're fixing to end the show right now. To use a good Texan word.
We're fixing
to do that, y'all.
Can we sing?
No, we're not going to sing. So I want to ask you, what do you hope to achieve in the next week or so before we talk again in Iceland? What are you looking forward to?
Well, I'd like to finish this walk. It's kind of a challenge. We'll see what happens tomorrow.
How much further do you have to go?
I think it's still about 80 miles.
80 miles, yeah, that's a lot.
And I like to find good food, good drink, and good friends along the way.
Yeah.
There we go. Yeah, good. What about you, Vicky?
I treasure every time we get where we're going and then sit down and talk with people. And I have not yet been in any pub or environment of any sort where I looked at someone and said, hello, and they didn't just become my best friend for the day.
No. You have to say, if you're in a pub in England and you say hello, people turn around and look at you if you have a Texas accent.
That's true. They have been very interested.
Yeah. Well, folks, we're at a place called the Berrywood Cottage, and it's just south of the village of Widdicombe on the Moor. And Peter and Miho are our hosts. If ever you're over in this area, you can certainly check it out. It's been a very beautiful place for us to stay. And though there are numerous other Airbnbs, and that's another wonderful thing, I think. Now we can find our own places electronically and look at all the various details of the place. So there's another advantage of modern technology, right, where we can be our own travel guide. So there's so many pluses to modern living, I think, and the fact that we're all connected in this way. What I hope to achieve in the next couple of weeks is further adventures in Britain, going back to my homeland and seeing what it's like today, how it's changed, and taking Wendy to places she's never been to before. So we're going to a couple of those places and explore those. And Wendy, what are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to seeing those places.
There we go.
I love England, and it's interesting because when we were coming back from Norway, I love Norway. I mean, Norway is a beautiful countryside.
Absolutely is.
It blow you away in the topography and just the total beauty of Norway. We were talking to somebody who said there's no place in Norway that's not beautiful, and they are right. It was like visiting someplace else, and coming back to England, it was. Paul has made it so gracious here and so lovely here. I love the mist. I love the light, and it's so wonderful. I have only one thing to say, and to Paul though, is that in the language I've seen you enjoy yourself when somebody will speak Welsh to you. And or when you're in your own countryside and you resonate with it. So that part of us that is where we're from, we're from someplace. We have a history.
Right.
We have a community history that is important to us.
It's important, right?
Yeah, it's very important to us.
So feel proud of your, you know, where you come from. Yeah.
And enjoy that.
All right, but at the end of the show, next week, minister, comedian, BBC TV presenter and host, author, and multi-talented woman in general, Maggie Whitehouse, joins me again. She's been on the show quite a few times. Wonderful lady, mischievous, intelligent, fascinating. She's an expert on the Kabbalah and many other areas of feminine spirituality. She's always a hoot. As they say. So we're looking forward to having an interchange with her next week. Right now, I want to say thank you to Vicky and Steve. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I always thank you to Wendy. And we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye now.
No stars.
Thank you for listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.